All right, Matthew, welcome to episode 106 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people, with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, aka MTB PhD. We are sports scientists and coaches, working professionals, and educators, researchers in the space of sports science, running, triathlon, mountain biking, adventure racing, kind of anything really that takes over an hour, where we're across it in our research and professional careers. So with the Performance Advantage podcast, we love to bring sports science to you. That's what we're doing here today with some key steps that Matt has discovered in his last couple of decades working as a mountain biking professional, both as an athlete and a researcher and a coach and an inventor of Brakeace, the world's first braking hardware and software to monitor your braking out on the trails. And these six key opportunities and steps to getting faster on the downhills are also applicable to running and cycling, swimming, triathlon. So, you know, just if you're not an MTB rider, you can still apply these principles across any sport. So stay tuned as we get into those. All right, Matt, so hit me up. What have you discovered is the key? How can I get faster with these steps?
Do you want me to rattle them all off to you like straight away? Yeah. Or should we like save it till the end and slowly build up and give, so we don't give everything away straight away? I don't want someone to get all the information without listening to the whole podcast.
Right? Yeah, but you're only going to say what it is. It doesn't really describe
how. Okay, I have listed these in order then. So what I call them, and obviously this is a working title because Will is like the title guy now. He's basically overtaken my job. I used to be the title guy. Now I'm the thumbnail guy, which actually, if you follow us on Instagram, we got some banger thumbnails. So I'm happy to take that one. And Will's gotten much better as titles. So working title though, six key. Actually, that's not even my working title. My better working title is six key elements of MTB training. And you're right, you can apply it to running. And this isn't just for downhillers. This isn't just for cross-country racers. This is for every kind of mountain biker. But I also, Will, I really want to hear from you about what you think, how you think these apply to runners as well, because I know we have a lot of runners that listen to the podcast. But in order, the six key elements of MTB training. Number one, easy riding. Number two, threshold riding. Number three, pacing. Number four, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this one, skills. Number five, I'll probably get even more flack for this one, depending on who you are. Five is strength. And number one, yeah, it's supposed to be number six, but I made it number one again because it's very important, is recovery. So those are the six key elements of MTB training.
All right. I'll reserve judgment till I hear the rest.
Yeah, save that for everyone else. Everyone else can judge online and leave comments and whatever. But actually, I made this presentation for the regional mountain bike club. They asked if I could come on and do a talk because everyone's training at the moment for the Waka 100, or the Waka 50, which is like New Zealand's premier endurance event, if you will, I guess. I can't remember if this one was canceled last year or what, but
yeah.
Oh, was it? Yeah, that's right. Because it was postponed and then it was totally canceled. And this is when we were having some serious problems with lockdowns and things like that. But now that's clear and everyone's coming over. Like people are coming from Australia to do this event. People are, obviously everyone in New Zealand's doing it. Will's probably even doing it. And
well, other year, Yolanda Nefford had entered, but then didn't end up doing it.
Oh, that was probably the COVID year. Yeah. Well, it's a pretty big event. And obviously it happens in our hometown of Rotorua. And that's where lots of good mountain biking happens. But the regional club where I used to live, they called and they're like, hey, can you talk to us about training? I thought this was a good thing to talk to them about as they're preparing for the event. So I did that live, recorded it, put it on YouTube, MTB PhD YouTube channel. So you can check that out if you want to follow along with the slides, or if you're watching this on Spotify video, well, you also won't see the slides there, so you'll have to watch it on YouTube. But that was where this came from. We thought this would be a good one because actually our most popular episode ever, or the second most popular episode is How to Train for XC Mountain Biking. And we did that like, that was like 2 years ago, and it still gets like hammered every day. So this is kind of our way to, of revisiting it.
Yeah. So Matt, I see number one is easy riding. What?
Yeah. Well, if you're not going to do anything, if you're not going to do anything at all, you can still get better at racing just by riding easy. Right?
It's the same with riding, right?
Well, of course you want to go hard.
Racing's hard.
It is. I can't tell if you're yelling at me or yelling at the computer or just yelling at physiology. But if you get better at riding easy, that means you can go hard more times. It's really what it means. I was explaining this to an athlete the other day, and we were talking, a lot of these things apply this way. It's like a cup, right? And you have a cup, and every time you pour it out, that's a little bit of fatigue that you've kind of exerted as you're pedaling along, you know, up a hill, sprinting, things like that. So if you can do lots of easy riding, and as well as number two, you can increase the size of your cup, right? So you can pour it out more times. And that just means you can go harder for longer. So if you get better at riding easy, you work on that aerobic development, you get faster recovery time in between those hard efforts. That's really important because you have to do a lot of really hard efforts in mountain biking. What do you think of that?
Yep. Still struggling to wrap my head around it. No, I'm not, but I know a lot of people do. Like, it's one of the biggest, it's one of the most reoccurring questions I get in runners I work with one-on-one. Like, you know, as like, you know, we catch up every 2 weeks, monthly, whatever kind of level of coaching they're getting, they're like, wait, why am I like, why are you telling me off for running this hard again? Like, and then it especially makes more sense as we start to get into what, like, I won't, you know, jump ahead, but the harder training, the easier riding needs to be easier, because like once you, yeah, it all links, right? Because then you're going to affect your recovery. But one of the hardest things is like, you can't see all of the benefits of riding easy. Like, Strava's not going to give you anything. Like, they're going to say you're useless. Training Peaks is going to say your TSS is low. Like,
yeah,
there's just nothing that's really giving you the, like, the tangible feedback that you're like, you're increasing your fitness. Whereas you go and you do it harder, you know, that gray zone stuff that we talked about, another massively popular episode, the like five myths of gray zone. I can't remember what it's called, but that was one.
A good title. Good title. Got to say.
Thanks.
Probably your best.
We really went in depth about how you can just absolutely derail your training and ruin your fitness improvements by gray zone. And that's, if we can train easier, we can do everything that we need to build a aerobic based system. That's like the foundation of our house. And the more you can build that aerobic base, you're essentially getting like your first story of your house for free. And then you get a second story once you start doing the hard stuff. Whereas like, if you just like, oh, I'm just going to go out and hit it, you're essentially just like building a basement. That's it.
Or maybe you're just building like the third story.
Yeah.
With nothing to like set it on. Like, well,
my son's like
gonna
two
go?
And a half. You're building a Duplo tower like he does. Like all the just smallest bricks and then like the biggest like truck on the top. You know, that's not
straight vertical. Yeah. Well, I guess I don't know how deep we want to get in the science in this one, because we have a lot of the sciencey ones where we talk about the benefits of aerobic development. We actually like talk about that almost every podcast. So
I was actually revisiting I was writing some a pacing article for someone, and
hey,
I
mean, that's number three, don't go too far ahead.
No, but I revisited our pacing episode. We have a blog on that on the performanceadvantagepodcast.com website. And I was like, oh wow, we went deep into critical power threshold and anaerobic work capacity. So like, we'll touch on that here, but that is another absolute banger. If you want some science on like your anaerobic capacity, check that out.
Yeah, definitely. I think,
but anyway, for now, easy riding, Matt. Now, cross country, it kind of makes sense, right? Endurance.
Yeah.
What about downhill?
Yeah, downhill.
Like I'm only going for like 2 or 5 minutes.
Well, downhill, the main thing you want to watch against is that you don't get that you can make it through a weekend, right? And if you don't have a solid aerobic base, if you're tired after one run, like, and a lot of people do get tired after one run because it's extremely demanding. If that totally wastes you for the weekend, well, your race isn't going to go well. Whereas you can like noodle down a hill.
When I was watching, I was like following like their, they had back-to-back weekends and then they had like track walk, they had practice, they had times training, qualifying run. I was like, actually, this isn't just your 4 minute like race run.
Nope.
This is like they essentially went, they were doing these 4 to 6 minute, if they're doing a full run, not just stopping and checking a session, like a section. I was like, they're just absolutely smashing themselves for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like you'd have to be so fit. If you guys out there just think about that, doing like full bung 4 minute efforts all day.
Yeah.
Like from, and then like having lunch and then going back up and doing them. Like you'd have to be so fit to be able to recover so you don't have any residual fatigue by the time you get to your race.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And remember, like, I think it's not like the standalone. This is the only thing you need to do to be good at mountain biking.
It's like, well, now we're about to get into the more, I think.
Yeah. It's one of the 6 key elements, right? So if someone's about to tune off now and say, oh, these jabronis are just a bunch of easy riding lovers, there's more to come.
To the roads, you losers.
Yeah. So here, I want to actually, every single one of these points has a try this. Every single one. Try this. So for easy riding, 2 hours easy on the road. You should easily be able to hold a conversation the entire time and don't half wheel your mates. So that's my note here. So 2 hours easy on the road. If you can do that at least once a week, you can get out and do that. Cruise. You have to be able to hold a conversation the whole time. And if you're half wheeling someone, you're not going easy. Right. So
yeah,
going
easy. Some like World Cup downhillers, and I know you have them riding like 4 or 5 hours on the road.
Yeah, they'll do long rides. Absolutely. Definitely beneficial because you need to make it through the weekend. And obviously XC riders understand this, enduro riders understand this. And I think marathon racers and obviously ultra marathon racers understand that. So easy riding, number one.
Number two.
All right, number two, we got threshold riding. So you think of your threshold as like your ceiling, and this is your highest level of aerobic power output. I think of like going up a really steady climb, and you're trucking along, you're feeling pretty good. This is the kind of riding that you really need. And if you get really good at doing this, you get really good at being able to repeat hard efforts. So it's almost like the easy riding, except taken to the next level. And the really good thing about this kind of riding is that you can, it's a pretty hard workout. Like, for example, maybe I'll give you one in a second, but if you do a threshold workout, you're going to feel like pretty tired at the end, but you're not totally destroyed like you would be if you went and did sprints or really, really hard intervals. And that's a really important thing because if you're not absolutely smashed after doing this, you can do another one in a couple of days, right? You give yourself some time to recover, maybe bang out an easy ride after the next day, and you'll be able to do that kind of a setup again, which means you don't have a ton of rest. Right. And you can continue training, continue building yourself up.
Yeah. What I like, especially on bikes with the threshold work, is you can actually, because the fatigue's not huge, you can incorporate it into like a long ride. So you can get kind of good bang for buck where you have to go easy. You know, if you're doing a 3 hour ride and maybe you've got whatever, you know, some hill climb, like 3 hill climb, like long hill climbs in there, you can still continue on for another couple of hours easy, you know, and you're getting a really good like very varied stimulus in there. We like that just is really specific to your race. So when we're looking at threshold, we're looking at carbohydrate utilization, lactate production, acidity, as well as some of the neuromuscular stuff in there. But really, it's like you've probably heard of sweet spot training, and it's that's what it's doing. It's trying to find that sweet spot where you're, I guess, generating a lot of these byproducts that stimulate muscular adaptation, cellular adaptation, but then you're not getting this like huge residual fatigue. Because you go out and you go, well, I mean, yeah, you go do a race and of whatever duration. Okay, let's just say like you got a really long downhill section or a really big up and down, you know, you're smashed, or you're doing sprints. Like there's a lot of byproducts and the neuromuscular like mental strain that just leaves you pretty cooked. And like besides like a 1% of our audience, you're not professionals. Like you've got jobs and stress and families and inflation to worry about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and also bear in mind that when you are racing, let's say you're racing XC, most of the climbs that you do are going to be at your threshold power. And people think about racing and they think about, well, yeah, well, you're going as hard as you can up every climb. That's way harder than threshold. But actually, if you strip it back and you look at what your power output actually is on, let's say, even a 2-minute climb, it's probably around your threshold, even for like very, very, very good riders. So to be able to increase what your threshold is and to work at your threshold, you get all those benefits, those the physiological adaptations, you get all those, and it's the same power that you're going to be racing at. So it's important to be able to do that.
Yeah, and as we spoke with Tim last episode, it is probably, or arguably, as we argued, the best predictor of overall fitness and performance, better than VO2 max, better than like heart rate max. It's yeah, a real determination of your actual fitness. So the higher you can get your threshold, the larger your aerobic base, the larger your anaerobic work capacity, the larger your capacity to work hard as well. Because yeah, you could go 20 minutes hard and maybe you and I have the same FTP, but if you haven't done like any threshold work and I've been smashing it, I'm going to be able to do my threshold, and if it's above threshold, for an hour plus, and you're going to be cooked after 40 minutes. Like, yeah. So,
well, you
so that works. So what's the try this, man?
Okay. Actually, let me say one more thing. If we take 10 riders, this is what we did with my research almost 10 years ago now. There was the first research looking at FTP for mountain bikers. And this is exactly what we did. We measured their FTP and then put them all in a race. And basically, we could predict how fast you'd go based on what your FTP was. So your FTP, let's say you bump it up a little bit more, you just bump yourself up in the results that little bit more. So this threshold is incredibly important to be able to raise that FTP level. So I definitely have a blog on that. And we talked about that same study like a zillion times in our masterclass and all the power meter courses that we made as well. So that's really important. So FTP is super important. So try this, do a hill, find
your FTP. Did you measure VO2 max in that?
No, not that one, but we did one where we did critical power, which remember I gave Tim a bit of shit because he didn't cite my critical power study.
Yeah.
So we did basically, we repeated that same thing. We measured their VO2 max, I believe, and also their critical power. And it was same story. Like, yeah, same story. So critical power is better. And actually, I don't think we reported VO2 max in that study. So never mind. But yeah, same thing.
You did it though. I'm pretty sure you collected it.
Yeah, we definitely. Well, we had to be able to set the power for the critical power test. Everyone did a VO2 max test.
Yeah.
To set the slope. Aerobic level, the highest level of aerobic, the higher you can get your aerobic level, the better you're going to do. And this is definitely for, you know, if we're talking, we need to just make it through a weekend, whether we're doing XC, downhill, or enduro, is a pretty important element to be able to get through that weekend and to be able to continuously perform. So try this.
Yep.
Go up the hill as fast as you can and use that to set your FTP. If you have any questions on how to do that, I have instructions on my website, mtbphd.com. But then take 90% of your time or 90% of your power and ride at that power up the hill 2 times for your next workout. And that'll be like basically your threshold workout where you're riding almost at, like, obviously it's not at your limit, but you're doing it twice. So that's great. It's better than you're doing it longer than your hardest, but it's also at a lower level. So try that. And that should help your threshold.
Okay, Matt, I'm just thinking some people, they're like, oh yeah, I'm a mountain biker. I don't have a power meter. I have a heart rate monitor, but I can't find it. And when I did find it, my batteries were flat.
Yeah.
So you're saying go up, because we've probably all got that climb, right?
Oh yeah.
So we have a look, we check it. We either do it real hard, or if we've done it real hard recently, got our Strava time. And then we're just trying to drop that Strava time, or like add on a couple of minutes from that. Cause like, it's hard with like cycling. Cause in running, I can say, like, to someone who has no heart rate or power meter, or like, it hasn't set their threshold pace or anything, you just go, well, watch, you know, take your marathon pace and add it in a couple minutes, or add a minute and a half, and that's your easy run. Like, this is like the most simplistic, easy start point.
Yeah.
So that would be what you do, right? So if you did 18 minutes, you want to just do 20 minutes for the climb.
Yeah, basically. Obviously, I guess the way I wrote it is absolutely wrong, because 90% of your best time is faster, which obviously is impossible. So forget that. But yeah, so like 110% of your fastest time, right? So you go a little bit longer. Mountain bikers, we don't talk pace. This is why power is the only way to go. Like,
well, I just lost a zillion people. So I have all these calculators, like, or I have this whole Google sheet that you can just download from my site, but the calculation becomes super hard, because I want to have, you know, your thresholds, whatever, 4 minute Ks, and I want to be like, oh, okay, well, this is 90% of that. Well, 90% of the number is like a smaller number, like 90% of time is a smaller amount of time, but you need to be like at 110%, or like actually 109% to be 90% less. But then it's also minutes per K. Yeah.
It's opposite for pace. Yeah.
It's a headache.
This anyway, is why power is way better.
Right? Yeah. It's like,
Use real numbers.
All right. Okay. Cool. So threshold riding, doing two times around 20 odd minutes at 7 to 8 out of 10 effort level.
Yeah.
Or 90% FTP. Gotcha.
Yeah. There it is. Cool. All right. This third one then is pacing. Do you want to try and steal my thunder and basically say all the things I was going to say? It sounded like you wanted to just before.
No, I'm fine. It might apply differently, because you guys start hard.
Well, yeah, that is a problem in mountain biking, actually. Like, everyone wants to start a mountain bike race like it's a 100-meter race, right? Like, you're lining up against Usain Bolt and you're about to just smash him for that 100 meters and then your day's over and you pack it in and you go rest. But that's not how mountain bike race works. You need to go that 100 meters and you need to keep going for the duration of the event, whether you're doing downhill, enduro, or XC. Like, it's not over after 100 meters. You need to keep going. And I always say that mountain biking is more like a 5K or like a marathon. And we know, even if we just look at the phenotype of a 5K runner, they look more like an endurance athlete, much less so like than Usain Bolt will. Usain Bolt's very muscular. He just needs to go as hard as he can, as fast as possible for 100 meters. And that's not what we need to do in mountain biking. We need to continuously repeat that. It's very much aerobic. So pacing is really important. And I know we always talk about the donut shop analogy. I can't remember how many times we said that one on the podcast, but we talk about sprinting to the donut shop and how tired you would be when I beat you to the donut shop. And you think about the last time you went as hard as you possibly could and how you felt after that. And then think about also how much longer you need to continue. So the last time you went as hard as you possibly could and you produced your, let's say, best ever 1 minute power, you were probably really smoked and you couldn't do anything probably for a good 30 minutes after you had like a burrito or a donut or something, or a good sleep. So I think we need to really consider this. And obviously you mentioned that we have the blog on pacing. I forgot about that one because we really went deep into the science and there's lots of different pacing strategies that we can use. But I think it's really important that we get confident in trying a new pacing strategy and understanding what we can actually do and continue to perform. because especially with mountain biking, as we get tired, we also start to make mistakes. And every time we make a mistake, that's more speed that we've just lost. So we need to kind of float that fine line between executing our skills appropriately and getting to the finish line, giving everything we can give in our body. So try going a little bit easier at the start, just at the start, and see what happens. And obviously try and empty the tank by the time you get to the end.
Because with pacing, I guess, like with running, it's way more in our control because there's no drafting and everything, for the most part, is individual time trial.
Like same in mountain biking.
Well,
pretty much.
Kind of. Because like in downhill, so enduro and downhill, you have to initiate your potential energy, right? Like you have to contribute. You can't just like amble out of the start heart if it's like not very, like you're going to have to bring yourself up to speed. So you're going to have to exert an amount of effort.
Definitely.
Mountain biking cross country, at some degree, if there's a bell curve, there's way too slow where you're like, well, now I'm trapped behind everyone. And then there's the other end of the bell curve where you're like, yeah, I'm in the front, but also I should not be here. And so there's the actual middle of the bell curve where there's still going too hard. Like you're going to have to, if your average power output's going to be 300 watts, you're going to have to go at 500, 600, 700 at the start, regardless. Otherwise you're going to have yourself in a crap position and you're going to lose more time than you would gain by just like starting at 280 watts. You know what I mean? So what's your recommendation there?
Well, like how tricky.
How do we handle that?
Depends what you're going for. Like if you're in a World Cup fighting for the win and you know the race is only an hour and 20 minutes and there's 75 people in front of you, you got to go pretty hard at the start. Otherwise, you're going to be in last place and then you're never going to make it past anyone. But also, if you produce your highest ever 1 minute power on the start, you're also just going to go backwards the entire time. So it's kind of threading that fine line between not losing positions and giving a good effort sustainable. But then if we strip that back, most people aren't racing in the World Cup against 75 people. Most people are maybe starting something like the Waka 100 that we talked about, where you're starting with 500 people and you're going to be out there for 4 hours. Right? So that's totally different. Like in that case, if you're going to average 300 watts, which is a bloody lot, it's probably not going to happen. You need to start at 300 watts basically, because you got to do that for 4 hours. If you sprint to the donut shop and you expect to keep running a marathon right after that, I don't think that marathon's going to go great, right? So starting steady is really important if we're going to an event to finish, especially.
Yeah.
Or even like a pretty good time, pretty good amateur time. Starting steady is important.
We that study you did where we didn't have a chain on our bike.
Oh, yeah.
Like we weren't allowed pedaling. I think that's like one of the best self experiments you can do.
Oh, yeah.
Like even so, obviously, like you have to get yourself up to speed, which is, you know, it's definitely true, but it's worth doing like five, you know, steady pedals, way less than you would normally do, and then not allowing yourself to pedal. So like, so you're pedaling wise, like force output through the pedals, you're exerting near zero effort or energy, and then it's all contributed to concentration and vibration absorption handling on mountain bike. I think that's an amazing experiment. And then you find that sweet spot, that bell curve where you're like, well, I'm not trying to sprint for a minute and then have nothing, like just mistake ridden bottom section, and then I'm not like going way too slow, that my skills are amazing but I am way too slow.
Yeah.
I'm just like rolling to a dead stop on the like flat section.
Yeah there's a happy medium there, right? And that just makes sense. So that's just talking about 3 minute downhill, because the study you're talking about this, we compared coasting down a hill to racing down a hill, right? And both of them, you went as fast as you could, but the one you couldn't pedal. And like your time was no different between them. And
I was faster,
on average,
like 4 seconds faster.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, we randomized it and we did all the proper stuff. We did statistical analysis, and on average, it was the same time, which whether you coasted or pedaled, but you saved a lot of energy by coasting, which means if you have to do that again, well, you're just going to be better off by coasting, right? Because you have to climb up the next hill and race down the next downhill. So pacing is really important. So try it because the hardest thing to do is actually follow through with your pacing strategy. This is what I find with basically every athlete. We're like, all right, what's your pacing strategy then? Yeah, all right, let's work that out. Okay. Yep, that sounds good. Pretty low power at the start. And then it's difficult to do. So most people make a mistake and go way too hard at the start. And like, I probably should have not gone as hard at the start. Well, probably. Because it's extremely difficult. Even when I did like these 5K runs, remember those Super Sevens where you start with like 1,000 people? I had like small children passing me. I was like, I better pick up the pace. And I picked up the pace and I blew up. So, and I knew what I had to do. I had to pace it. But so if you, at least like in your training, you can try that to just pace a little bit smarter and compare those strategies. So like you said, the downhill, you can try that, right? Try coasting. But also, what I like to do is find an XC loop. And maybe it's like up and down, up and down, up and down. Something like 10 or 15 minutes. Turns, all the rest of it. Just like a normal XC track. Go at 90% and see how fast your time is. It probably feels a lot easier by the time you're done, right? Because you only went at 90%. Then compare that to a time where you go all out. And you're going to feel like you're pushing a lot harder when you're going all out. But I would put money on it. Depending on who you are, right? Maybe not on you, but maybe someone else. I'll put money on it that you go an equal time, whether you go all out or you go at 90%.
Pacing, it's weird. These are like easy riding threshold makes sense, because hard it feels like training, but easy riding and appropriate pacing, they just feel wrong, we're motivated,
like the antithesis of racing.
We're driven to improve and achieve and validate, and so by doing something easy for an hour or 2 hours and getting and then feeling like what's the issue here, what do I need to do, that's how training should feel a lot of the time. So you're ready. So tomorrow, like maybe you could only ever do 3 workouts a week. And now you're like, well, I might do some plyos or like some strength stuff in the afternoon. Or maybe I'll go for a little run around the block. Like you start to build more, like more stimulus and increased recovery. And then your workouts start to be like 10% harder and faster, like in the hard days. Like, where's this come from? And then same with like easy, starting easy, start easy, finish fast. I say that to everyone, like start easy, finish fast. Because you'll never start too easy. It's a race, you're not gonna be that person like looking around and like, oh man, I'm last. How did that happen? You're like,
yeah. Just the fact that you're listening to this podcast means you're like, that's probably not going to happen, right?
some of my best runs have always been like thinking I've lost, like the event, like my time and my goals have gone out the window, and then them coming, and then halfway, they realize like the race is back on. Like what? Like everyone's starting to come back to me and I'm like still feeling good. And then on the flip side of that, the yin and yang of that is like some of my worst races have been like, I'm going to win after like 10 minutes of a marathon, like I'm going to get my PB. And then I bumped into this guy running Matt on Sunday. You know who he is. I won't say his name, but like, it's like, yeah, it's real weird. Like, I keep getting to like 30Ks in the marathon. It's just, I have everything, like everything's going well. And then it's just not. And then like, I've just pulled out. I've just had to pull out at like 30, 35Ks, like the last few times.
What? There's not much left to go.
Well, it's just too, like, it's, he's like, it's too hard. Wow. And I'm not going to get my PB. So what?
I see.
It's like this negative, reinforcement loop of like, more training, which he's now doing, to like to try and fill that last 7Ks or 10Ks or 6 miles of a marathon. You're like
no, you have to get him on a training plan then. But I think an important thing to note is that just because you start at maybe 90% or something less than 100% doesn't mean you finish at less than 100%, right?
So much different.
Yeah,
like, it's,
you empty the tank by the end. That's the hardest thing to get right.
Yeah. That you can that cup Matt was talking about. You've got a full cup at the start. And if you tip out half of it in the first 25% of the race, the 75% is still there, but it's just gonna like.
You have to make that last.
Yeah. And so 75% of the race, half the cup. You want to like pour it out evenly as
I'm
evenly
with you on
as
the
possible.
Cup. Yeah. So, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Pacing. What was next? What are we up to? Number four.
Yeah, we're on number four. So number four is skills.
Nah, don't worry about it. What's number five?
Come on, man. Skills is where it's at. I mean,
skills
obviously
pay the bills.
Skills to pay the bills. There's a lot of skills that you need in mountain biking. And obviously, this is something I spend a lot of time thinking about because
the mountain bikes like working on skills. Like, as runners, we hate having to do like running technique. Like, I want to go out the door. I want to run for an hour. I want to get back in the door. I don't want to spend 15 minutes doing some like all this like technique drills. Do mountain bikers like working on technique or like,
dude, let me ask you a question. If you don't want to spend 15 minutes working on technique, do you actually want to get faster?
That's why I'm running more.
That's a rhetorical question because I think like someone who isn't willing to spend 15 minutes working on technique, maybe they don't actually want to get faster.
No, come on.
Well, hey, if that's a limiter, right? If that is a limiter, it takes every part of every element is a piece of putting together the puzzle of performance.
What is that? It's motivational fatigue theory, right?
Go on.
There's all these fatigue ones, theories, central governor and the flush model who had Guillaume on, but motivational theorem, Samuel Mokora, is like, you actually choose to give up based off of your level of motivation, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I want to get faster, but the level of motivation that I'd need to get faster, to actually start to include like a 30-minute running technique workout, is too large for the level that I want to get faster. But there's also
that is actually totally applying that theory in the wrong way. But I see what you're saying. But we should actually get him on to talk about that theory. You should email him. That'd be pretty fun to talk about because I find it interesting. But you're not applying it in the right way. So I see what you're saying though, because spending your time to do something that you're maybe less interested in, even if it really, 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 really helps you and is really, really, really important. For runners, strength training is one of those. I get it. You know, you just want to run. But if you want to get better, you're going to like spend those 15 minutes. So skills for mountain biking. Well, actually, I think mountain bikers have been it's been difficult to work on skills because there's no way to know what to do. And this is exactly why we made Break Ace. So Break Ace, obviously, just quick.
I think it's actually the sorry to interrupt your plug. I think that's the problem with technique across the board.
Yeah.
It's like, I can go, it's my job, right? So I know what I need to do, and I know how all of my knee and hip flexion angles should look while I'm doing these different techniques. But if you go out there and you're doing them wrong, you're doing them wrong. And they are actually potentially harming you more than they're benefiting you. So you know, it's easier to not do them.
Yep. Yeah.
Because that's pretty much have to be observed otherwise.
Yep. No, this is good. Thanks. That is actually extremely good segue to my plug. Do you mind if I go ahead and do that?
Go.
Okay. So what BrakeAce does is it measures your braking down a hill, and you will brake 90 sometimes. Let's say you on a 3-minute downhill. And if you want to get better, where do you go to do that? There's no actual way to know. So what BrakeAce does is it cuts through the noise of all those 90 times you braked and says, these are the three places where you can go to improve. It's like a low hanging fruit. It's like, this is where you have the most room for improvement. So let's go there and just work on our skills in those sections. Because if I do that, my time's going to improve. And that's actually really easy. You can bang that out quickly, just by using the key opportunities strategy. We call it the BrakeAce method. But what it does is it then quantifies your riding in these areas where you need to improve. So you can actually see that you're getting better. And historically, there's been no way to see that you're getting better in some sort of a skill sport. I mean, let's take one of my other sports, fishing. How do I measure my skills in fishing? I got friggin' no idea. That's why I come home empty handed, you know, most of the time. So being able to measure and track your skill, or at least the result of your suite of skills, is incredibly important. And that is basically going to change the game in how we think and work on our skills, because now we can put a number to it and see if I'm getting better beyond a stopwatch.
I think that's probably, you're exactly, BrakeAce hits the nail on the head, because we don't have that for running, right? And so you go out and you go for a run. We have all of the data, stride power meters, Chorus has a pod, Garmin has the metrics within the heart rate strap. And so you get all of these stride length, left, right balance, vertical oscillation, but there's no number. So everyone's Googling, is this vertical oscillation okay? You're like, well, are you 6 feet tall or 5 foot tall? And then so your stride rate and stride length, and what are you running on? Whereas if you can have the algorithm you've developed to go, well, you need to work on, because you need to work on, this drill, ABC drill, whatever it is. And you go, well, I'll do that. But actually, when you go out and you're like, I don't know what drill I need to do, there's 1,000 running drills. Which one's going to be most important to me?
Mm.
Same with mountain biking, right? You could be doing the funnest drill, right? The most successful.
Love wheelies.
Yeah, cornering.
Oh, yeah.
But actually, the one you showed me when I was doing the prototype testing with BrakeAce is dragging my brake.
Yeah.
How would you even know that? You know, so that's a fun one as well. I'm going to practice braking late and more aggressively.
Yeah, I mean, you trying the key opportunity strategy, you had your PB on that downhill. So that was perfect, basically.
It was, yeah. And I went top 15 at that on the Strava.
Yeah, on one of the most popular trails in Rotorua. So yeah, that was pretty good.
So what can we do? Buy a BrakeAce.
Yeah. Let me look at my slides, actually. So obviously buy a BrakeAce. But if you can't do that, that's okay. Try someone else's. And then if you can't do that, one of the best things that you can do is have someone take a video of you, because most of the time we have no idea what we look like when we're riding. So go to a tricky part of the trail and just have one of your friends take a video of you so you can see what you're doing. It's super easy to do. It only takes 5 minutes. And then you can at least see what your body positioning is, where your eyes are looking, and how your you're leaning with or against the bike and using the bike to get through this, get a video. See what you're actually doing. And then you don't have to guess about it. And you can go back to that same section and try it over and over, or even just one other time, or work on those skills that you need for that section somewhere else. So by having that video, that's kind of your benchmark. And you can then go back, let's say you go back there in a month's time, have your friend take a video again, see how you get through that section, and see how the weekend of riding goes. So that video is a nice and easy way to do it. Don't forget, though, there are uphill skills, so you can definitely consider that, because uphills are also sometimes really difficult. So if those are what's slowing you down, then you should check those out.
Man, I'd give another guarantee that if you're listening to this and you have someone video you in any sport, you will be able to identify one thing you can improve.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you'd be knowledgeable enough to just immediately see it. I'm always amazed at when, like, you know, you or someone takes a video for me for a reel or some YouTube thing or whatever. I'm like, oh, I'm doing that again. You know, yeah. Like, it's crazy. You think, like, yeah, we always revert back to the mean. So,
yeah. And video is better than a photo.
Five, right?
Yeah. It does. Okay. I'll just say one thing about video being better than photo, because there was a photo of me running and I obviously looked like I was pushing a lawnmower. And in that case, the photo was really good. But if I would have seen a video, it probably would have been even better for me, because I can't like look at that photo and think of how that felt, because I'm a poopy runner, you know? So, so that does lead to number five. And number five is strength. What do you think about strength training? I know you've been hitting the gym a bit. Are you still going?
Yeah, I'm still going. I'm committed to one time a week, which is massive, but
you're going.
Like it, so I'm going.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, you know, it's we argue about this a lot, and while I like strength is going to help across the board from a sprinter to an ultra marathon runner, no doubt. It's just where I get caught up in the like online strength recommendations is the energy availability I see for our clientele, right? Like family, like working 40 plus hours, like you got to balance the enjoyment factor with the improvement factor and the like time and energy availability. And I just see like some coaches really going like, you got to do strength. And I think there's just more effective ways of implementing strength into this is running. This is like a weight bearing sport I'm talking about here, not so much cycling, like that. To get the benefits and strength gains you're looking for. And so typically I just, err on the side of not strength until it is time to, and the time and the energy and the access to a gym facility and appropriate equipment is there, and the motivation's there. If the motivation's there, I don't want to force it, because we could do other things that are going to be more easily accessible and still get like a good strength gain.
Okay.
That's my stance.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I totally agree. I'm not sure if you think I was going to disagree with you, but I fully agree with that. And this is why it's number five. And I think if you cruise around the internet in any sphere about mountain biking, you're going to see a lot of stuff about strength training.
Especially, a lot. Like,
yeah.
Some like of the stuff I see, I was like, you know, just Red Bull TV do a day in the life or whatever. And some of these, like Finale's bench press is like 250 pounds. Like,
holy cow, that's actually a lot.
It's a lot. It's like 130 kilos. And I know, like, they've done, you know, he's a Red Bull athlete. They've done a bit of stuff with him, and he does a lot of strength training.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of it. Oh, we had Derek on.
Yeah, strength
training cyclists. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So here's where I am on that. Like, it is important, but compared to the other things, and again, depending on what you're doing, it may be one of the least important parts of that. Like, if you're the strongest person in the world, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the most skilled mountain biker or have a very good threshold or any endurance at all. As a matter of fact, if you're the strongest person in the world, you probably have no endurance.
Well, this is one of my arguments as well. They're like, oh, what about strength training for like injury prevention? I was like, well, take a bodybuilder who has optimally developed every single muscle and get them to run 5Ks. Are you going to tell me they won't get injured?
I don't know. I've never seen that. But I would pay money to see it, actually. I don't think it would go great. So what I think, if let's zoom out, it's like who are we talking about? If we're talking about an age grouper or your everyday weekend warrior, strength training is probably close to the bottom for the level of importance. But depending on which sphere that you look at on the internet, you might think that strength training is the most important part of mountain bike training. Well, maybe for someone it is, right? If they have
that caveat, it's not.
I would say it's not. There would be very few people where it is, because if you take a road cyclist, let's say, with the most spindly arms you've ever seen, they look like a T-Rex, they can still make it around a mountain bike track, right? Or make it across a whole day of enduro. Yep. Whereas you compare them to the strongest person in the world, obviously we're looking at it, the most extremes, the strongest person in the world isn't going to be able to make it around a mountain bike track, a full day of enduro, or through a weekend of downhill practice and racing. So obviously I still think it's really important. So it is. Every athlete I work with is in the gym 2 days a week. And this is, we're talking XC World Cup to downhill, right? They're all in the gym. So I still think it's very important, but maybe for, depending on where you're at and who's listening, maybe it's not the most important thing for you. And that's why I do definitely put those other things ahead of it. Strength training, I put them ahead of strength training for sure.
So then what's your recommendation here? Because you're kind of saying like it is, but it isn't.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. It's is it possible to give an answer, really? It depends on the person, but think about this. Okay, so when's the last time you lifted your hands up over your head?
I told you this. I do it all the time because I have a son. I'm always throwing them in the sky.
Okay, before that?
I don't know. Depends if I've been at down at the local street ball.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So never. So if that's you and you never lift your hands above your head and you're looking to improve your mountain biking, I would say actually maybe strength training is something that you could add in, right? Once you've added in these other things that we talked about, because most of us don't move our bodies dynamically. There's a huge problem in culture.
You're saying something that now I think you're differentiating, like you have this ambiguous term, not you, but strength training, right? But like movements under load or under a range of motion. Cause I see that, like I work with lots of middle-aged men. Holler at your boy. And
do you put yourself in that category? Not yet. When do you start to be middle-aged?
Who cares? It just keeps moving 10 years above how old I am. So they sit a lot and their hip flexors are tight, their hamstrings are tight, their glutes lack activation, but they don't need to get stronger. Like overall, the strength is there. It's like, how do you activate the muscle across a range of motion under force? Like that, like plyometrics, you know, like for runners, I think plyometrics are amazing, like a dynamic plyometric movement where you're like, anyway,
the highest power you can possibly produce. Plyometrics. I don't know. Like that's probably under the same category. It is super broad. Like we're not talking about bodybuilding, which would also fall under strength training. And we're not talking about the workout videos that people did in the 80s. which might also fall under the same category, right? We're talking about something in the middle there, something in the middle that gets you moving dynamically and recruiting these muscle fibers that you basically forgot you had. And that's a really good way to start to produce more force, is by just reactivating the neuromuscular junctions to these muscle fibers.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen by pedaling a bike. I mean, it will to a certain extent, but there's a lot of caveats, obviously, so maybe we won't get into those. But to be able to recruit those, you need to be able to produce a higher force than you can by doing sprints, which end up also causing other stresses. So strength training is really, really good part of training. And
yeah, so what can we do? Like,
okay,
start.
Okay, well, there's a really easy one you can do. You can do the MTB PhD home strength circuit. It's like a 30-minute circuit. I think it's 10 exercises you do, 10 reps of each, 3 sets. You don't need any weight. You don't need any stuff. You just do it. And you bang it out. It's like pretty hard. It only takes 30 minutes, but you can do that twice a week. I know it.
Yeah.
So start there. And you don't need to go to the gym. You don't need to spend any money. Start there. And I would say that's probably a better place to start than getting into like a hardcore strength training program, obviously depending on where you're at. But if you can do, like, if we let's zoom out and look at all the things that we talked about. We talked about easy riding. There's 2 hours. We talked about threshold riding. That's another ride. Then we talked about I forget what was third. Pacing. Okay, so pacing's another important thing.
And then pacing, you can almost do as part of your threshold ride.
Definitely. So okay, that's still 2 days we're out there. Strength training is another potential day or part of a day. And skills is probably a day, right? And let's spend a day working on skills. If you can get those 4 workouts in a week, you're off to a pretty good week already.
Yeah.
Like that, actually really good week.
That's a banger. And this is where I find like coaching or mentorship like super helpful, because you're not gonna do it. You're like, oh yeah, Rick, I need you to come out and film me just on this couple sections today. Like, oh yeah, can you do 3:30? Like, oh no, I think it's supposed to rain, and then I've got to pick the kids up. Can you do 4? And then you're like, well, I want to go for a ride, so I'm just going to go for a ride. And then it doesn't happen. But when someone's like, take a video and send it to me, you know, and I'll have a quick look at it, then like you do it, like it's on your plan. It's the same with strength training, because I think like these things are worth committing to for a short duration. Like, I'm going to do Matt's at-home strength training video, 30-minute circuit, once this week. Like once during the weekday and once at the weekend. That's it. I'm going to commit to it. I'm going to put it in my plan. It's why like Matt and I use Training Peaks. It's real good because everyone gets super addicted to it going green. If you don't do it, the workout goes red and you feel like a loser. And so
no, you don't feel like a loser. It's just, but it's, you can look back over time and be like, well, no wonder I didn't get any better. I didn't do like half the things I planned. And then you feel very sad. And then, but no, it is good for like sticking to the plan, right? Because then
Then noticing these differences, because that's what I've that's why I committed to, when I got injured, I was like, I'm gonna go to the gym, gonna fully commit one day, nothing crazy, one day, 2 days is goal, you know, one day minimum. And and I noticed the difference.
Cool.
Right. And so it's like, well, I have to keep going, because it's the same with my stretching. I notice a difference, a positive change. And then I'm not even doing hardcore like squats and deadlifts and stuff. I do like
just
some
benching.
Functional stuff, just benching, just tries and buys. To make sure I'm balanced, because I was getting off balance, and so then I got a stress fracture on my left side. So try it. Yep.
Cool.
Commit.
So yeah, there's a YouTube video if you want to follow along with those workouts. They're pretty good. And most of my athletes do that same workout. So give it a jam and see how you go. So, all right, well, we'll move to number one, AKA number six, and that's recovery. And I didn't want to give it a number six because it's not the least important. actually, recovery is extremely important. And you and I both know this because we both have developed chronic fatigue at some point in our racing lives. And it's not good. And more training doesn't solve it. The only thing that solves it is recovery. And I always say it's basically impossible to do a recovery ride as a mountain bike ride, because mountain biking is maybe a little bit too hard. It's higher than what a recovery pace would be. So, you know, maybe a rest is better. And when someone says that they get a Strava medal on a recovery ride, it's just actually just not possible. So if you're getting Strava medals on your recovery ride, you're going too hard on these rides that you're considering recovery. And that means that over time, you're going to just dig yourself a hole because you're not going to get the proper recovery. So sleeping is also recovery, right? The best athletes in the world are getting 10 to 12 hours of sleep a night. And I know none of us, and probably 90% of people listening, 99% of people listening are not getting that. But that's when you're recovering. We have busy lives, right? We're not all pros. So we need to get as much sleep as we can, and also make sure we're not training too much, training too hard. And I think, I don't know what you think about this, let me know, but I think 2 to 3 days a week of hard, in, you know, quotes, air quotes, because I think threshold kind of classifies as that hard stuff, 2 to 3 days a week of that is enough going hard in a plan. What do you think?
There's a great distance running coach, Jack Daniels. What he was asked, what's the ideal amount of training? The least amount you can do to get the improvements you desire.
Okay.
And I thought that was really good, because what I see a lot is doing less or easier, lower intensity over a longer duration, like 6 weeks or whatever. That's the consistency part of the puzzle, right? Is like, yeah, it just takes time. We have to, and so I wouldn't, yeah, 3 is like a lot. That's a lot of hard workout. You'd want to be training 7 days a week to be doing 3, to be able to handle 3. And then it's like, well, start with 1 and absolutely like nail it. You know, you might be able to get 3 hill climbs rather than 2, and you've got your easy long ride. And then you've got like your shorter aerobic ride, and maybe you've got some like technique built into that. But recovery is, if you find, like, I've been tracking my sleep since I got COVID, Matt. Like,
well, how are you doing it?
Just on my watch.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess it's a little different with mountain bikers, but every runner has a watch that has it built in.
Or maybe just go to bed with your Garmin. Mountain bikers. The computer
And so is my wife. And so we've, like, for the last, it's almost like 2 months now, we've tracked like every night, and we're starting to see like trends around training and recovery, and also like the temperature and all this, like all these factors. And it's like, well, if I'm not getting more than 7.5 hours, and my deep sleep isn't above an hour 20, like that hour and a half, like bracket, and whether that's accurate or not, it's consistent on my watch, right? So it's just a consistent number that I can look at to go, this is what it is. It's trying to measure it off of like the variation in your heartbeats through, you know, LEDs. So it's not going to be amazingly accurate, but it's consistent. So those are some numbers, and then I can like track that. But sleep 100% correlates with my ability to train, like concentrate and recover. So I think that's just like the number one. And then like not training when I'm like super cooked.
I agree. That's all key.
I mean
maybe it is really number one, right?
Yeah, you can't like do 6. It.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, because it's like, also a certain point.
Like, I just won't do anything this week. You're like, well, you still like it is last on the list, but it's because the other stuff has to come first. Like, it's just,
yeah, it's tricky. Yeah. I have a few athletes that are using that Whoop.
Yeah,
Whoop. Is it a band or a ring? I can't remember.
Band or a ring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's the aura. But yeah, that stuff's pretty cool. Like, you get some pretty interesting metrics. You need to build it up over time, though. So don't throw it away. Just keep wearing it. Keep wearing the thing so you get lots of info. After about a year, you got some good info. But yeah, sleep, recovery, however, like, there's lots of ways to classify it. It's very, very important. And my try this for that one is to set yourself a plan and stick with it. So whether you set it or Will sets it, or someone else sets it, set a plan, and that has built-in proper recovery, and try it for consistently and see how you go, and you'll probably get the results that you want.
And for this is your whole thing, but I'd add track it. Like, most of us have smartwatches, and they all track sleep now. And just wear it at night. You might be a non-wear your watch at night person, whatever.
Like most people.
Just
try. I mean, before smartwatches, nobody wore a watch to bed. But now really? That they can do, did you? I never did.
I think so. Yeah, like, just wear it.
No way.
Is it getting in the way?
Yeah, it's pretty annoying.
What? What are you doing? You're asleep.
I don't know. It gets like real sweaty and stuff. I just don't like it. This is the first thing.
Did you have one of those like leather band watches?
No, man. Calculator watch all day.
Half,
this one.
Half bracelet, half like clock.
Like Flavor Flav. No, I
think Nickelback had them.
No, okay. Yeah, I just don't like it. But when I had a smartwatch, well, the one that you gave me, wore it a few times. It's pretty good.
You have it.
Yeah.
Thanks, shout out Chorus.
Yeah, maybe I'll try it wearing it to bed. But yeah, tracking it or writing it down, like, I still have athletes that just write it down in Training Peaks because there is a metric for every day that you can write it. I have athletes that write it every single day along with the resting heart rate.
Synced health metrics with
Training Peaks. I saw that was a big deal
because like everyone's sleep starts coming through. I was like, what is this? I don't want to know how much you've slept.
I think it's good. Yeah,
well, I do, you know.
It's just something you'll track.
I guess what
time.
I thought was like, do you want me to know how much?
It feels a bit invasive.
Because there's no privacy question. It just is like came through, and there's other stuff in there as well. Like, you could be tracking your menstrual cycle and all that. You may not know. You may not want someone to know.
Yeah. Okay.
Like hydration status, like you like calories and stuff. Some of that stuff you're like, oh, well, I don't want Matt to know.
Yeah,
like what I'm eating every day.
Well, you know, in terms of like Training Peaks is to improve your performance, and all those things, as we know, are part of your performance. So maybe just leave them. I don't know, if you want to hide them, go ahead and hide them, but it really does give you a full picture of yourself by having everything in one place, and that's why I love it.
Yeah, tracking trends as well.
So yeah, those are the six key elements of MTB training. I think, Will, maybe we should leave it there. And if anyone has any questions, they can email you at get at Will on his website, or you know, get at us on Instagram. That's probably the easiest spot, so we can send a quick
at
answer.
At Dr. Will O'Connor and at MTB_PhD and at Performance Advantage Podcast. All right, remember to check out our courses so you can learn all of this and have all the resources available at your fingertips whenever you want them, whenever you need them, at the performanceadvantagepodcast.com website.
And also get CEUs for USA Triathlon.
That's right. All right, guys, until next time, catch you later.